Morning. The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Larkin, Judge Bryan, Judge Klofaki, the Honorable Michelle A. Larkin presiding.
Good morning. Welcome to this Zoom session of the Minnesota Court of Appeals on June 22nd, 2023. We have three cases on our calendar this morning. The first is Botaine versus Peterson. We're ready for oral argument. Would each attorney be sure to introduce themselves before each leg of your argument so we have a record for the audio recording of the hearing? Attorney for appellant may proceed.
Thank you. Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Michael Jorgensen. I'm an attorney in Thief River Falls, Minnesota, and I represent the appellants in this matter, Darwin and Dina Boutain. The basic issue before the court today is whether it was appropriate for the district court to have awarded contract-based attorney's fees based upon a one-sentence provision contained within a farm lease that the district court had previously ruled as void. This is the second time this case has been before the Court of Appeals. The first time the case came before the Court of Appeals in part reversed and remanded, determining that the district court's award of sanction-based attorney's fees was not appropriate and awarded asked the district court to determine whether contract-based attorney's fees was appropriate. On remand, the district court awarded contract-based attorney's fees and the appellants appealed from that decision. We are dealing with a farm lease wherein the appellants were the tenants and the respondent was the landlord or owner. The lease states in relevant part, contract is void if rent is not paid on time. Tenant may request additional 30 days with landlord approval. All legal fees for non-compliance will be covered, or excuse me, will be covered by renter. A rent payment that was due on March 1st, 2021 was not made timely. The respondent initiated negotiations for a new lease with the appellants. So appellants delayed making that payment. Subsequently, the respondent indicated that a new lease was not going to be made. And so the respondents made payment for March 2021, but made it late, 18 days late. The respondent refused to accept that payment. Appellants initiated a declaratory judgment action, asking the district court to determine the enforceability of the contract under those circumstances. Appellants also motioned the court for a temporary relief to allow them to continue farming the land pending the termination of the underlying lawsuit. The respondent brought a counter motion asking that the appellant's complaint be dismissed and asked that they be awarded attorney's fees based upon that one provision in the contract I just recited. The district court dismissed appellant's complaint and declaring the contract void and awarded the respondent respondent sanction-based attorney's fees. Appellants appealed that decision. The Court of Appeals then affirmed the dismissal of appellant's complaint, but reversed on the award of sanction-based attorney's fees and remanded back to the district court to determine contract-based attorney's fees. On remand, the district court awarded contract-based attorney's fees in the same amount it had previously awarded, plus additional amounts that were incurred as a result of the remand. The district court also awarded statutory costs under Minnesota Statute Section 549.02, despite no requests having been made by the respondent for such statutory costs, and despite the fact that the appellants had been successful in the first appeal. So, we believe that district court erred in awarding contract-based attorney's fees on two different grounds. First, the district court had already determined that the contract to be void. That ruling was affirmed by the Court of Appeals. If a contract is void, it is unenforceable. All terms of the contract are unenforceable. We have cited several cases in our brief.
If I can jump in with a question on that point. Let's assume that the contract provides for attorney fees related to any lawsuit seeking to declare the contract void.
If the contract had provided for that, then it would have been appropriate to award the fees, but that isn't what it said.
Right, but to the extent that your argument is that the moment that the contract becomes void, the provision around attorney's fees is unenforceable, That would still be true if the contract had said any attorney's fees regarding a lawsuit seeking to make the contract void.
If the lease contract had said that one could pursue attorney's fees even if the contract were rendered void, I would agree then they can still pursue the attorney's fees. But that, again, is not what the contract said. The contract specifically said attorney's fees would be awarded if there was non-compliance. It didn't talk about a contract being void. I understand that this
attorney's fees provision doesn't say that. But to the extent that your argument is the moment that the contract is declared void, there is no enforceability of the attorney fees provisions. That same argument logically would still hold if the attorney's fees provision was specific to fees incurred regarding a lawsuit to declare the contract void. So it seems that if you're agreeing that that attorney fees provision that is more specific, and I understand different from ours, but if that provision would be enforceable despite the overall contract being declared void, then your argument doesn't seem to be as persuasive. And now we're looking at something else, like the language of this particular provision and not the legal point that at the moment a contract is void, all terms are unenforceable, including attorney fees.
Right. In the hypothetical situation you are talking about, if in fact the contract had contained language to the fact that an action determining the enforceability of the contract also can result in attorney's fees, then I think we would have contradictory provisions within that lease that would require interpretation by the district court. But again, that is not what the contract.
So the moment that that contract is declared void would not render unenforceable that attorney fees provision.
If there was a provision in the contract that indicated that it would still be awarded in the event the contract was declared void, then I think there would be room for the district court to interpret the contract because there would be contradictory provisions. But in this case, again, we don't believe the court has discretion to enforce a provision, one sentence provision within a contract after the court had already determined the contract be void. The courts must leave the parties to avoid contract where it finds them. And in our brief, we had specifically cited Robert Davis Construction versus Althuin, which I think is akin to the present case. In that case,
isn't it true that the holding in that case is the district court erred in awarding contract-based fees where the prevailing party prevailed on equitable remedy only, unjust enrichment? That's how respondents prevailed. And the district court's error is in awarding contract-based fees to an unjust enrichment claim. Not that there's some legal prohibition, but that's the narrow holding, isn't it?
No, I would disagree. I think if you read the case, at least the way I interpret it, it indicates if once that contract was determined to be void, the court lost ability to award attorney's fees based upon a contractual provision within that contract. That's why the court allowed the damages based upon unjust enrichment,
but refused to enforce. Prevail on their contract-based, the breach of contract claim?
No, they succeeded based upon unjust enrichment. So the contractor in that case received damages for the work it had performed on the theory of unjust enrichment. I think that the holding in that case is that when the court determined that that contract was unenforceable, the only way the contractor was able to receive damages was based upon unjust enrichment, and it could not receive an award of attorney's fees based upon a contractual provision contained in the contract, which was unenforceable. And that's why it's akin to the present case. This district court in this case determined this contract was unenforceable, was void, and therefore it should not have awarded attorney's fees based upon a one-sentence contract provision that benefited only the respondent in this case. Despite the district court having determined that the contract was void, the district court went ahead and tried to interpret this void contract and indicated it was a harsh and absurd interpretation of the contract to not award the respondent attorney's fees because it was the appellant who had failed to pay timely under the original lease. And the court cited the cases of Space Center versus 451 Corporation and Dana versus St. Paul Investment Company. But those two cases are not like the present case that we have before the court now. In Space Center and Dana, there was a contract in both of them, which indicated that in the event of a default, the contract was void. And in both cases, one of the parties to the contract intentionally defaulted so as to render the contract void. The court had indicated that a party to a contract cannot be permitted to set up its own default to defeat the contract. But again, that is not like the present case. In the present case, appellants did not want to defeat the contract and fought to enforce the contract. It was the respondent who sought to defeat the contract and sought to declare the contract void. That wasn't the appellant's original intent. They
Mr.
want
York,
to.
If I can ask another question here.
Sure.
The term noncompliance, as used in the attorney fees provision, I see no argument in your brief that that term is ambiguous. And in fact, I see the contrary argument. I think you're arguing it has a single unambiguous meaning. Is that true about your argument? Not whether it has multiple meanings. Is your argument that it has an unambiguous meaning, the word noncompliance?
Right. I think as it applies to this case and the case before the court now and the arguments that I'm making, it applies only if there's noncompliance. Noncompliance essentially means that you've incurred attorney's fees to force the other party to comply with the agreement. Our client tried to comply.
Well, I think you make the argument that it's limited to a dispute about rent, and that the word noncompliance can't be so broad that it would relate to some of these ancillary obligations in the lease. But apart from that argument, it doesn't appear to me from your written submission that you're saying anything about the meaning of the word noncompliance that would be susceptible to multiple reasonable interpretations. In fact, you're saying it's unambiguous.
I'm saying that what it means in this particular case is that attorney's fees are to be awarded, assuming it was not rendered void. Attorney's fees should be awarded only if there's attorney's fees incurred to force my client's compliance with the contract. And my client complied with the contract and tried very hard to force this contract to be enforced.
So if I could have a follow-up. If you're not arguing, and I don't see it, and you haven't said you are today, if you're not arguing that this word is ambiguous, then the dispute, it seems to me, is less about the meaning of the contract and more about the nature of this lawsuit and whether or not the nature of this lawsuit is a lawsuit to enforce the contract or to force compliance. And the dispute here is, was this a lawsuit that relates to noncompliance or not? You're frowning. Sorry, you must disagree with that. Go ahead.
Well, I'm trying to follow what you're saying, and I apologize for frowning. Wasn't my intent to be disrespectful.
I didn't take it that way, not at all. I was just giving you a chance to respond. Sorry.
Right. And maybe we're concentrating too much on an issue that's not before the court. When we started this lawsuit, we wanted to determine the enforceability of this contract because under the circumstances, my client's delay in making the payment was occasioned by the respondent trying to initiate negotiations to change the contract. But trying to get back to the issue of what noncompliance means, and again, I'm not trying to avoid your question, but noncompliance means not following the contract. And my clients were trying to follow the contract. Yes, they delayed in making that payment, but there was circumstances that warranted that. And again, that's water under the bridge. I'm not trying to re-argue an issue here. I'm just trying to respond to your question. You know, the court determined that it was, you know, our lawsuit wasn't appropriate and dismissed our complaint. Okay, so now we're talking about should contract-based attorney's fees be awarded when the court determined that contract is void? And again, our position is that it should not have awarded contract-based attorney fees based upon the contract being rendered void. And also, as you've already alluded, it's our position that there hasn't been attorney's fees incurred as a result of non-compliance, been incurred as a result of trying to determine the enforceability of this contract. We don't think that's appropriate. And I'm seeing I got 2 seconds left. I'll wait for my rebuttal. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. We'll now hear from counsel for respondent.
Good morning. My name is Patrick Rosenquist. I am counsel for the respondent, Aaron Peterson, in this matter, and may it please the court. I believe there is and I don't intend to relitigate this either, but there is a bit of a misinterpretation, I believe, from appellants on what the nature leading up to what the court found and affirmed was to be non-compliance. There was no negotiation.
Mr. Rosenquist, can I just jump in here? Sure. Because I want to clarify the thing you just said. The outcome or result of this lawsuit was a determination that tenants did not comply with the provisions of the lease. Is that correct?
That is correct. And as far as much that my interpretation is.
Would you go so far as to characterize the decision below as a determination of non-compliance?
I would, in that the court dismissed the appellant's suit. Why would you
characterize what the district court did as non-compliance or a determination of non-compliance?
Well, there's an enumerated list of provisions in a, you know, essentially a half page lease agreement, you know, turning tillable acres black, controlling noxious weeds. And the main one, from my perspective, is paying rent on time. And idea that there was ongoing negotiations has been litigated and discussed, and there just wasn't this back and forth between the respondent and the appellants the way the appellants describe it to be. There was rent quite clearly that was due on March 1st. That rent was not paid until March 18th, and then the appellants initiated suit, and respondent was forced to make an answer to that suit, and essentially it was a motion to dismiss that was ultimately affirmed by the Court of Appeals. So then we go on to the second part.
But I have phones keep ringing and I'm trying to shut them off.
But, you know, we go on.
Well, Mr. Rosenquist, if I can jump in again here. Thank you. The previous Court of Appeals opinion affirmed, if you're correct that the lower court made a determination of noncompliance, and that's the reason that it decided the contract was void due to noncompliance. And this court has affirmed that determination of noncompliance, then does it make any difference the reasons for the delay in payment as far as what we're looking at today?
No. And that's, you know, kind of my intention is not to relitigate those issues. I think that issue has been well established. There was noncompliance. And now we look at what the remedies are. The first remedy for noncompliance, in as much as it relates to just paying rent on time, is that the respondent can void that part of the contract that is essentially just the tenant's ability to continue leasing the land. The other remedy is for noncompliance is to essentially pursue and be awarded legal fees for having to enforce that issue. And this is where we're at today. So by my perspective, or the respondent's perspective, appellants failed to comply with the very simple terms of the lease. There is a simple remedy for that, that the respondent can void the lease and pursue legal fees if necessary. Now, it doesn't specify who needs to bring suit in order to have those legal fees be awarded. And I think the simplicity of the lease agreement leads little room for interpretation. I don't believe there is any real ambiguity there.
Did the trial court in this matter effectively make a finding of fact that the attorneys the attorney's fees claimed here was as a consequence or related to noncompliance? Isn't that what the trial court effectively did?
I believe that they did. I can't remember the specifics of the order.
So what's their standard of review if the trial court made that finding of fact?
Well, I would say that if we're going to look at the standard of review in terms of that finding of fact, then
it would be clearly erroneous. Isn't that the standard?
Yeah, that would be the standard, Your Honor.
So why was this clearly erroneous?
Well, I'm sorry, Your Honor. Why was it clearly erroneous that the court found? Can you please?
Clearly erroneous means that there's no basis in the record for that finding, isn't it?
That's true. That there's no basis in record in the finding, in as much as the my apologies, Your Honor, can you just repeat that question again? I'm having trouble following. My apologies.
Well, if in fact this is a finding of fact by the trial court, and if the standard of review for that finding is clearly erroneous, then I wanted to know from you why you thought it was clearly erroneous.
Well, I don't find that to be.
You agree that it is not clearly erroneous.
Correct. Well, my position, I'm sorry, is that the court did not err in awarding contract-based attorney's fees. That would be my position.
Understood.
Okay, my apologies there. But the court did, you know, I would concur that the court made the correct decision in that contract.
So what you're really saying is that based upon the standard of review, this was not clearly erroneous, and therefore we ought to affirm.
That is correct. But from my perspective, that, you know, the decision by the district court was clear. It was not erroneous, that they did not err, and that that should be affirmed. If I can move on, my apologies. The position that we're taking is that it was a very simple contract, that the appellants defaulted, that there are two remedies for that default. One is that at the option of the respondent, they can terminate or void the contract. And then if they are forced to litigate, they have the ability to collect their legal fees. I believe that those provisions, or at least specifically the provision that they are entitled to legal fees, is severable from the rest of the contract, or at least divisible. And it would be somewhat of a toothless remedy if it was put in there, agreed to by both parties, and especially the respondent was not able to enforce that provision that both parties agreed to. It is not a one-sided provision. As the appellant alluded to, It is a provision that protects the respondent in the case or in the event that the appellant defaults. And in this particular situation, the appellant did default. So the idea that it's one-sided would mean, okay, from the appellant's perspective, you know, that they can default and the respondent has no remedy, can get drugged through a multi-year litigation through multiple appeals.
Let me suggest something else on the standard of review. Or is it true that the suit that was brought was not related to a non-compliance, but rather to enforce a compliance?
Well, the appellants evolved their narrative over time. They wanted to enforce the original contract, but failed to comply by the simple terms, which is why the respondent moved to dismiss the claim.
Mr. Rosenquist, why did the district court find the contract was now void?
They found it to be void because of the late payment of rent. The rent was paid on March 18th. It was due on March 1st, I believe.
So the determination that the lawsuit... ahead, Judge.
This was prospective rent for the following year. Is that right?
That's correct. So
rent isn't paid in advance, there's no continued tenancy existing.
That is correct. And the contract doesn't specify necessarily who has to bring suit in order for a respondent to be able to collect in the event of noncompliance. But the idea that not paying rent on time is somehow not necessarily noncompliance, as the appellant suggests, is not based in reality. There is an enumerated list of things that they cannot do, and there's a variety of ways that those things can be enforced. From a tenant's perspective, they are, they're required to handle a bunch of obligations in order to handle that particular parcel in a workmanlike manner. But the main thing is to pay their rent on time, and that just did not happen. So
when you say it did not happen, the district court found the tenant did not comply with that part of the lease.
That is correct.
And the fees we're talking about here, there's a finding of fact that those fees were related to the lawsuit that results in the determination of noncompliance.
Yes. So, effectively the appellants were the ones that brought suit, initiated suit. There was essentially a finding that, respondent had the ability to void the contract. And the remedy for having to make that defense because of appellant's noncompliance was that respondent was entitled to legal fees. I think that because the provision comes subsequent, that it is a result of the appellant's duty to abide by the obligations that they effectively agreed to, at least gives the respondent some sort of remedy. The idea that the respondent is not entitled to that remedy would effectively render it just to be a throwaway line in a half-page contract that is ultimately 100% and completely toothless. And when you're taking a look at a contract, especially one with a severable provision such as that, you have to look at the intent of the parties. Well, both parties effectively agreed to that particular provision. So the fact that, or the idea that it wouldn't have any sort of teeth and that it is somehow a throwaway line is not, from respondent's perspective, based in any sort of good faith and fair dealing. If they effectively the appellants would be able to just sort of walk away after dragging the respondent through a multi-year litigation due to their own non-compliance. Unless there's any other questions.
If I can.
Certainly.
Mr. Rosenquist, there is a secondary issue regarding costs. I don't know if you'd like to address that briefly.
Your Honor, in my research, legal fees doesn't necessarily include costs. So we conceded that particular argument. And it is our position that we would like the appellate court, if it should affirm the lower court's decision as far as legal fees are concerned, to modify the order or the judgment just to negate costs. If that is all the questions, I would yield the rest of my time. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. We'll hear a rebuttal argument from Mr. Jorgensen.
Thank you. This is Mike Jorgensen representing the appellants.
Mr. Jorgensen, I asked counsel a question earlier, which should have been directed at you instead of at him. If this was a finding by the trial court that these attorney's fees were incurred as relates to noncompliance with the lease that was in existence until it terminated, at least, isn't our standard of review that it has to be clearly erroneous for you to win?
Questions of fact are based upon a clearly erroneous standard. I don't know that this is solely a question of fact in light of the interpretation of noncompliance. I would like to address a matter of law, however. As a matter of law, the district court found that this contract is void, which is affirmed by the Court of Appeals. So that's the law of the case. This contract is void. The question then becomes, can you enforce a one-sentence provision within this lease based on after the fact that it's been determined to be void? I think as a matter of law, you cannot. And
what's the authority that you cite us to regarding an attorney fees provision of a contract?
That Robert Davis case. And I cite a couple other cases that has language that would support that position. But opposing counsel...
This is Judge Larkin. I do have one question about your argument. I mean, it seems to me that the fees were incurred during the process of arriving at the conclusion that the contract was void. So it's not a circumstance where the contract was declared void, then there was litigation during which fees were incurred. Doesn't that make a difference that the fees were incurred as part of the process to determine whether the contract was void?
I think I understand your point. I don't know how to articulate my response. I agree that the attorney's fees were incurred in determining whether or not the contract was void. I don't know if that answers your question. But I want to, before I lose time here.
But you also agree that the district court determined the contract was void because it determined tenant did not comply.
Right, because it was a late payment. I want to address the point that opposing counsel raised that this provision dealing with the attorney's fees is severable from the rest of the contract or divisible. It is neither. There's no severability clause within this contract. It's not a divisible contract. A divisible contract means there are separate parts to the contract that has its own consideration for each part. There's no separate consideration for this provision dealing with attorney's fees. It is a very one-sided sentence because it specifically says that. It says only renter can, or only the lessor can recover attorney's fees from the renter. It is a one-sided provision. But when this contract is rendered void, the court has to look at, well, how do we enforce this one provision on a void contract? I don't think there's a way to do that. It's a void contract. So is that provision. It's not severable from the rest of the contract. It's not a divisible contract. It's simply void. Granted, this contract was poorly written. It was not written by the appellants. It wasn't written by the respondent, but it was written by the respondent's predecessor, and the respondent assumed the position of their predecessor on this contract. And this contract could have said that it was terminable upon the discretion of the respondent or the landlord in the event of a breach by the tenant. But it didn't say that. It said it was void. It could have said this provision dealing with attorney's fees would survive the rest of the contract being rendered void. It didn't say that. We got to interpret the contract as it's written, and the it's written, the contract is void. District Court found that. The Court of Appeals found that. How can it now go back and say, well, despite it being rendered void, we're going to enforce this one provision for the benefit of the respondent? I don't think there's a legal basis to do that. And so that's our main...
Counsel Judge Larkin again. Yeah. I'm just thinking here. Isn't there a difference between a court saying, well, the contract was void because it was never enforceable? It was an invalid contract. For example, a contract that we would say is invalid and for reasons having to do with public policy. But that's not what we have here. It's void because there was a breach which resulted in the termination of the contract. That seems to be a different circumstance, isn't it?
I don't think it results in a different outcome. It's rendered void. The contract itself said it's void. The court said it's void. I don't think you can come back now and say, I'm going to enforce this one provision.
I'm a little concerned you're putting form over substance in terms of the word, because, you know, void typically means never enforceable, invalid from the start. That's not what we're talking about here. So, yes, they use the word void, but what they really mean is terminated.
But it is what the contract says. Contract says void. So if you rewrite it, which the district court apparently tried to do, that would be a way to rewrite it. But the court shouldn't be rewriting this contract. Thank you. I see my time's done.
All right. Are there any other questions from the panel members? All right.
We can't hear you.
Oh, I'm sorry. The matter is submitted and you'll have our decision within 90 days. My apology.